very little I remember from
From your very early life.
Yeah.
Could you remember anything from your school days?
Elementary school.
Yes.
Did they have kindergarten then? Do you remember kindergarten?
I don't remember kindergarten.
I was trying to think.
Yes, I do remember kindergarten. Mother and I lived in a little apartment in Cleveland Heights. I even remember the address, 1732 Coventry Road. Don't ask me why. And mother's best friend, it was a husband and wife, and they had a son, Bobby. The name was Irving, Bobby Irving. And he was a year older than I, and just a love of a boy. And he adored me. I mean, he was the brother that I never had. And he used to walk me to school. And he was in the first grade when I was in kindergarten, and we would come home, and he would teach me everything he had learned that day. And I also remember having to go to the bathroom, and I wore little panties with little buttons on them. And I couldn't get my panties buttoned, and I walked down the hall to Bobby's room, and Bobby had to button my pants for me.
Surely, that's wonderful. That's the best story of all.
But anyhow, Bobby was teaching me, you know, day by day what he learned, and when I went to first grade, I skipped first grade. They did a lot of skipping in those days. Mm-hmm. And I skipped again. I just skipped one semester, and then I also skipped part of the first half of the fourth grade, I think. They skipped me again to get me on the September. Right. So actually I was kind of a year ahead of myself. And when I graduated college, I was just 17. I'd been 17 in April and graduated in June. And that probably wasn't so great for me, looking back on it, because I was not terribly mature. As I told you, my mother was a very strong person. I was not at all independent, and just kind of was used to, you know, getting permission to do almost anything. And my social life, I think, kind of suffered as a result of being a year younger than most of the other kids. But I wasn't, you know, I wasn't miserable or unhappy. I didn't go out very much.
But they don't do that. They haven't done that in many years.
No, they don't. They don't.
No.
But so I do remember, and I loved school. And I was a good student, and just, you know, very well motivated. And when Mother and Cookie were married, I was 9, so I was, I guess, in the third grade, would I be?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyhow, when fourth grade.
Yeah,
we moved to Shaker Heights. And the Shaker Heights school system then, and I guess still, was one of the best in the country. And it was better than the Cleveland school system. Oh, we lived in the house where, I'd forgotten this, where Cookie had lived with his mother. And it was in Cleveland proper, it wasn't in the Heights at all. And I went to school there 1 year, to a school called Chesterfield School. I'm sure that neighborhood must be probably all black now. It was that, you know, that part of the city. And I know that I was way, when I went there from the Cleveland High School, I remember that I was ahead of the kids in my class. And then when I got transferred to Shaker a year later to an elementary school, I was a little behind, and they wanted to put me back a half a grade. And I had a fit. And I really carried on like a lunatic. So they agreed to let me try. And I made it. But consequently, my arithmetic background was very weak because I missed the whole, fractions have always been just, you know, somewhere off there. And I never liked math particularly. I did it because I had to, and I remember getting 100 on the geometry college board because I had memorized everything. I never understood geometry, and I don't to this day, but I got 100 on the exam. So that's by rote, you know. But anyhow, arithmetic to this day is a big weakness.
Had then tell us about high school. Did you continue in Shaker?
Continued, yes. And once I got over that initial hump, I went to junior high and high school. And Shaker High School was like a private school. In fact, I went to Wellesley from Shaker and found myself to be as well prepared as any of the girls who came from private schools. And I remember certain teachers with great fondness. I had a wonderful English teacher who I think persuaded me to think of Wellesley, and then the fact that my father was there. And I also had met a boy from Springfield who was going to be in the vicinity, and he had a little something to do with my going to Wellesley too. And by the end of my freshman year, I didn't even see him anymore. I was very fickle. Oh, I really
it's
was.
Hard to believe.
Well, I was. And I was always in love, but boy, I remember a summer that I spent in California, which I did frequently. I used to visit my family, my aunts and uncles, my aunt, particularly when my Aunt Rose moved to California.
Was that in Hollywood itself?
Yes, they were Hollywood and Beverly Hills, which anyone who is familiar with those places today would not know the Hollywood and Beverly Hills that I knew as a child. It was, like a little country town almost. I was there, I think I was there 6 weeks, and I was in love five times. they didn't know what I was going to turn out to be, but anyhow, it was fun.
And what did you do for fun out there?
My Uncle Harry had a beautiful place with a big swimming pool and all that stuff. And we would go to the studio and I'm used to meet lots of movie stars and got lots of autographs and all of it.
Can you name some? Do you remember any?
You weren't in love with some of them?
No, I got crushes on some of the women. The stars. I can't. Isn't that
here?
Joan Blondell, I remember, and what's his name? He was from Pittsburgh.
Powell.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
William Powell.
No, not William. No,
no.
It was
Dick Powell.
Powell. Dick Powell. Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Al Jolson, who knew my. I went one summer. I went to the 1932 Olympics in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And the family had a box naturally, and I remember Al Jolson coming by, and they introduced me to him, and he said, they said, this is Dave's daughter, and he looked at me, and he said, Dave's baby, and he signed in my autograph book to Dave's baby from Al Jolson, only it's gone. I don't know what I mean. There,
how is it gone?
Sure.
That before I moved the last time, yeah. It was gone. That was that didn't
shame.
Come from. Yeah, there were some fun things like that. But my mother's friends used to say to her, "Aren't you afraid to let her go out and be subjected to exposed to all that glamour?" And it was funny. I loved it. I had a wonderful time. But I was always very glad to come home, and I didn't mind making my own bed. There was something very cozy about the smaller house, and and I, it was, I think it was good for me. I really do. I think that it helped to give me a sense of values, that first of all, there, you know, the wealthy members of the family weren't necessarily always the happiest, and I could see that a number of them weren't nearly as happy and contented as my mother and Cookie. It was very obvious. It wasn't because I was so astute. And I think that that I learned quite young that money really isn't everything, and it still isn't, as far as I'm concerned. It's very nice to be comfortable, and I would I'd rather be rich than poor, but it's not. It is. Money doesn't mean that much to me.
And what about your first marriage? How were you financially situated? And tell us about your raising your kids and so on.
Well, my first husband was in the insurance business, and he was sort of on his way up. We were quite comfortable. I had my grandparents had left me a little money, so that we, I had an independent, a small independent income. But
may I ask you your grandparents' name?
Yes, certainly. On my father's side was Pearl, and his name was Benjamin. Ben.
Warner.
And Warner. And I don't know what her maiden name was at all. You know, that was, it's a shame, you know, that nobody did this for my aunts and uncles. There are lots of, a couple of books have been written. My Uncle Jack wrote a book, and one of my other uncles said that it was a lot of baloney. they were very close, and they loved it, but they were very blunt. And if my uncle, the major, particularly, and if he thought that Jack was making up an awful lot of stuff in that book,
mm-hmm.
and he said so. But anyhow, there, you know, that no one ever did an oral history on them. And a couple of my cousins who I think would have been good resources, unfortunately, these are people in my generation, are also gone. And I don't, you know, it's just going to die, because I wasn't that close with any of them that I knew any of the, of the real history. But at any rate, we were with the combined, with what he made and the income from my little nest egg, we were quite comfortable, which we could be on what now seems like a pittance, but it was certainly sufficient for the for the times. We're talking about almost over 40 years ago. Oh my God! No, I was married in 38. So.
And you were divorced then.
I was divorced in 1953. The same year that I married Jimmy, who
mm-hmm.
came right along. I wasn't looking, but he just happened along. Jimmy had a cousin in Cleveland, a married cousin, who called me. My divorce was to be final around like the 1st of June. And it was Decoration Day weekend, and his cousin had invited him to come to Cleveland for the weekend, and called to ask me if I would like to go to the club, the Oakland Club dance. And I said, I'm sorry, I can't. My divorce won't be final until Tuesday. In those days, when before you were really free, you didn't date or do anything like that. That was that was over 30 years ago. So he laughed, and he said, it's not a date. You just, you're going to a club dance and you'll be well chaperoned, and I assure you nobody's going to talk about you. It's perfectly okay. So I said, all right. And Jimmy came to get me, and we had a simply wonderful time. And when I came home from the hearing, the divorce hearing, that Tuesday, there was a tiny vase of pink rosebuds with a card, "Good luck, signed Jim." And I sat down and cried. I was so touched, and I, you know, I really was feeling pretty bad. It's much as I wanted to be free at with two, you know, with a 5.5-year-old and an almost 12-year-old, I and just nothing in view for me at all. I didn't, you know, there was no direction for my life. And it was a very sad time, and that he would be that perceptive of how I might be feeling. Just absolutely, it was just shattering. And I immediately wrote him, and then he started to call me, and he came again the 4th of July, and at the end of the 4th of July weekend, we were engaged, and we were married in September.
But when was it that he brought you here for a party?
It was that summer, before we were married.
Do you happen to remember what Jim Haber said to Jim Levine? I'll tell you.
Yeah, I know.
He said, if you let this one get away, you're crazy.
That's
right?
And another one is Jimmy Trey. Jimmy used to bring all the girls around to meet his friends, you know. Jim was 36 and had never been married. And he used to bring these different young women around, and he would say, well, what do you think? And Elaine Kaufman said to him one day, she said, you know, when you find the right one, you aren't going to ask us. and that's
that
what
happened.
That's what happened. So
tell us when Diane and David were David and Diane were born.
David was born November 15th, 1941, just 3 weeks before Pearl Harbor, which I took very personally. I was just in those days. I had been in the hospital for 2 weeks, which everybody was when they had a baby at that time, and I was still not permitted to go up and downstairs. I was, you know, sort of on the bed at home, and that Sunday afternoon, friends came to call and to see the new baby, this one friend of ours who had been drafted and was just about completing his year, you know, I don't know if you remember. Joan, do you remember the draft? But this was before we were in the war,
right.
And they went in to serve a year.
Yes.
And this young man's year was almost up. He was going to be mustered out. And we had a radio,
earphones?
No, not earphones. Transistor. One of the first transistors. And the battery was going dead. And Irv Stoddard, this young man, was sitting in, you know, on a chair in the bedroom with this thing up to his ear because it was dying, but he could hear it if he had it. And he turned pale. And I said, Irv, what's wrong? And he said, James had bombed Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, we always remember where we were when certain things happened.
We all do.
And I remember just being so, I wasn't thinking about anybody but myself and my family and my son. You know, what have I brought a baby into this world for? That was the only, I don't know whether it was postpartum depression or what. It was very selfish and self-centered of me to feel it that way, but I guess, you know, emotionally, I think that's the kind of thing that happens to you after you have a baby. So then my first husband, that when David was a year old, he would not have had to, you know, he wouldn't have been drafted because we had the baby. But he felt that he wanted to serve in some way, and he went with the Red Cross and was sent to the Pacific. And he was gone from the time David was, well, he enlisted in the army, and there was a volunteer officer candidate school or something like that, that where they went through basic training, and they had the option of getting out if they didn't get accepted in officer school. And the Army, of course, you know, there's the right way and the Army way, and the Army had put him into the artillery, where a knowledge of math was essential in order to go to officer candidate school, and he didn't have the background. So he finished the basic training, and then couldn't get into officer candidate school, and he decided he did not want to go in as an artillery infantry person or whatever. So he took his option to leave, and then enlisted in the Red Cross. And so altogether, I mean, between basic training and then going into Red Cross and being overseas, he was gone from the time David was a year old until he was three.
Oh, where did you say he served in the Red Cross?
In the Pacific.
This was while we were in the war?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was.
He had an option.
He had the yes. He had, this they were trying to recruit people. You know, they wanted to get people into officer school, but they had to go through basic training. And of course, if they had any sense, or they would have put him into a field where he could qualify for officer school. He knew from the time that they put him into the artillery that he wasn't going to make it, but he didn't have the option to get out until after he completed the basic training. So that's what
he did. What was your life like while he was gone?
There were other young women, not so many with children, who were in my position, but a couple of my friends with young children, their husbands were went in too. I remember, you know, taking a Red Cross the first aid course. My good friend Lois Hayes was the teacher, and volunteering at the hospital. In fact, that was the beginning of my volunteer career, in a sense, because of course women, you know, volunteers were badly needed to do things that there have been people around to do before. And I stayed, you know, I ran the house, and I raised the baby, and wrote checks. I had my own account, which I never had before, believe it or not. I was then 25, 26 years old, and I was really, I was in charge of myself. And a baby, and with the first real responsibility I think I had ever had, and I liked it. I really grew up, I think, at that point. And so when my husband came back, he really came back to somebody different. I think that probably was the beginning of the undoing of the marriage, because I really was a different person. And he wasn't, which is okay. I mean, I'm not, but he needed somebody that somebody dependent and kind of clinging, and I couldn't, once you're not that way anymore, you can't go back and do it. So I think that sort of began it. But I wasn't aware of that. You know, it's only in retrospect and particularly when things began to fall apart several years later. But Diane was born in June 9, 1947. She was 5.5 years after David. I had always thought I wanted three children, but the war got in the way. And I didn't get pregnant right away when I wanted to either. But
just in the few remaining minutes, can you tell us a little bit more about the war experiences? I know there was rationing, though. Did you have any experiences?
I vaguely remember, I had to personalize again. My feet grew as a result of my pregnancy, and I couldn't get, they grew, I guess, a half size and maybe one width wider. I couldn't wear any of my shoes, and shoes were rationed. So I had and even baby shoes were rationed. You had to have coupons for shoes. And my mother gave me all, you know, whatever shoe coupons you could trade them among yourself. And of course, my mother, who had a whole wardrobe of shoes, so I didn't really suffer too much. But I didn't have a wardrobe of shoes. I remember that, and I remember being incensed at the black market in
coffee
and butter,
and gasoline,
and people who. I just thought it was hair. My mother used to call me Goody Two Shoes. But, you know, I really took very seriously the fact that our country was at war and that there were these sacrifices we had to make.
How did it manifest itself? I mean, how did you find out about the black market? Did people come to you, or did you just everybody knew about
everybody
it?
Everybody knew about it, and I knew, and some people openly bragged, you know, that they were. Being able to circumvent some of this, and they could get, they lied about, there were A coupons and B coupons, something depending. If you needed gasoline to for your business. Now, my stepfather was a traveling salesman, and he really did, you know, his livelihood depended on his getting gasoline.
Well,
he
presumed he got extra coupons.
He did, and that was perfectly legitimate. But a lot of people who weren't entitled would manage, you know, and I just couldn't imagine anybody doing anything like that. I just, you know.
And sugar.
Yeah. And I remember butter, and that oleo. If you could get oleo, but you had to color it. The dairy lobby had managed to see that colored oleo was illegal or something. They weren't allowed to do that. You had to do it yourself.
It came with
a little, with some kind of a orangey yellow powder, and you had to, you know, mix it by hand. It was nauseating. It tasted terrible.
I think we should stop here.
Well, thank you, Cheryl. It was fun for me.
It was fun for me. It made me remember a lot of things that I hadn't thought of.
We will continue this again.
Thank
I'm
you
sure.
so much.
Okay.
Okay.
See you next time.
Okay.
Let's let the tape run out. It doesn't matter what we say.
Well, I think we got me up to Pittsburgh, sort of.
Yes.
We did.
It's really,
Well, that was fun.
Interesting.
And as long as I'm young, there was things. Is that still running?
Yes, it's still going.
Well, anyway, as long as I've known you, there were still things that, you know, I really didn't know.
Well, you have probably things that I haven't said out loud because there was no,
I wanted to ask you one thing. When you traveled back and forth to California, how did you travel?
On the train.
Oh, the train. I didn't know. I didn't think people. I am a child of the jet plane.
Only did I travel on the train. Is it still going?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. It used to take four from Cleveland. You had to change trains in Chicago, and with my earliest trips, I remember were four nights and 3 days on the train, and no bath. You know, no, you could wash. I mean, there were lavatories, but I remember getting off at Albuquerque and buying little things from the Indians there. And I thought it was just marvelous. I didn't mind that it wasn't air conditioned.
There was no
such thing. And but it was just a great adventure to me. My mother was miserable.
Oh, she went with you?
When the first couple of times, and then there were a couple of trips when it was arranged for one trip I took when I was. I must have been about 14. Edward G. Robinson and his wife were chaperoned me. They were taking their, they had a niece or somebody that they were taking, and my uncles arranged that that I would go on the same train, and they kind of looked after me. I forgot that too,
yeah,
until just this
right.
minute. And I once, my Aunt Rose lived in New York for a number of years, and I was 12 or 13 when I flew from Cleveland to New York on a little bitty plane.
Oh, wow.